Manuscript Releases, Volume 2, Numbers 97 to 161. M.R., Number 112, The Third European Council. Release requested by A.L. White for teaching in Europe. Excerpts from the E.G. White Diary. Basel, September 25, 1885. I went into the early morning meeting. Several prayers were offered in French and English. My heart was drawn out after God in earnest prayer for the Lord to help and strengthen and bless us and to impress our hearts with the sacredness and importance of His work. I had the burden upon me at the early stage of this meeting to say some plain things. I presented the great and solemn truths that had been given to us from God to be proclaimed to the world. We should certainly fail if we did not walk in the light. Our success and prosperity in this great and good work depends on our seeking daily counsel and help from God. With divine aid, His servants can do what ought to be done and never fail. However strong the powers of darkness may press upon us, one can chase 1,000 and two put 10,000 to flight. I was wrought upon by the Spirit of God to tell them that, as a people, and also as God's ambassadors, we are far behind our opportunities and privileges. We stand condemned by the Word, and especially by the law of God, according to our delinquencies. God looks upon the heart. No people have been favored with the measure of grace which has been manifest to us living in these last days. If the people, having so great light and superior privileges, have not improved them, our condemnation must be in accordance with the non-improvement of the talents given us. Many testimonies were born, evidencing that some were determined to consecrate themselves wholly to God. We had in the forenoon a conversation with Brother Daniel Bordeaux. Elder Whitney, Elder Lane, W.C. White, and Brother Bordeaux's wife were present. I was compelled to bear a testimony of reproof, not pleasant for me, but very grievous. May the Lord set home this testimony. I believe that Satan has been repulsed, and that the Lord will give Brother Bordeaux the victory, the conviction through His Holy Spirit of his mistakes. We sought the Lord in earnest prayer. We presented the whole matter of our difficulties before Him who cannot err. He knoweth all our perplexities, and we believe He did hear us and will take this case of painful difficulties in His own hands. We see that some of our brethren are coming to the light. We are rejoiced to find Elder Madison in an excellent state of mind. His testimonies are to the point. He seems to be in perfect harmony with the meeting and helps us much in all the efforts we have made. Thank the Lord. We had arranged for a meeting of the ministers alone in the evening. This was carried out, and we had about 17 assembled, ministers and their companions. Brother Bordeaux was present. The Spirit of the Lord rested upon me as I prayed for light and grace from heaven. My faith laid hold upon the promises of God. His Spirit came into our meeting in large measure. Hearts were broken and contrite before Him. Brother Bordeaux was wrenching himself from the shackles of Satan. He was surrendering his will to God. Satan had thought to gain the victory over our brother whom we love in the Lord, but he was signally defeated. All but one prayed most earnestly, and many tears were shed. Brother Albert Vuillumier's prayer was in French, but we understood the Spirit. The angels of God were in our midst. Light and power from God were there. Brother Madison's prayer was indicted by the Lord and was most fervent, offered in great brokenness. I felt the peace of Jesus. I had carried a heavy load, and now I rolled that load upon the great burden-bearer. I could do nothing. Jesus could do all things, and I felt the peace of Christ in my heart. Oh, what can we do without Jesus? How dark and lonely would be our lives! He is our only helper. Sabbath day was set apart by fasting and prayer. A becoming solemnity rested upon all assembled. We are assured we shall have the victory. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7, verse 7. Basel, September 26, 1885. Rainy morning. The early morning meeting was appointed at 6 o'clock. I had been so burdened I spent some time in prayer. I could not sleep much. I felt unable to attend the morning minister's meeting, but felt that I should lose a blessing if I remained away. We found 23 assembled in a small room. I opened the meeting with prayer, and the Lord indeed came preciously near unto me, and apparently to all those assembled. Brother Bordeaux then prayed, and confessed his weakness in yielding to the temptations of the devil. He made a more full surrender to God, and was coming to the light, and light from God was coming into his heart. The prayers offered were fervent, and in brokenness of heart, with weeping, and the blessing of the Lord was in our midst. I was helped and strengthened by the Spirit of the Lord to speak to my brethren with many tears, and present before them the pure, holy character of our work, and the necessity of the improvement of all the talents God had given us. In the night previous, a book was opened before me, with the record of the past year's labor of the workmen, just as God viewed it. As I traced down the record, there stood every defect. With some, many hours spent in visiting and talking, occupied with unimportant matters, were registered as idle, time which should have been devoted to intense, interested work in the cause of God. How different from their report appeared the record of some of the laborers! How unsatisfactory to themselves! Every time that they associated with their fellow men, opportunities were open, could they have seen them, to draw minds to the Savior and to drop seeds of truth. But opportunities came and passed and were not seen or improved. Words of no consequence were spoken, and the evidence was given that the message of warning was not uppermost in their minds. It was not resting as a burden of their souls, that whenever their lips opened, it would flow out in reflecting the light of Christ given them to bless others. This is the profitable, true education for all ministers who labor in word and doctrine. This register recounted unfulfilled duties, days spent without prayer, and night comes with nothing to show for the day's labor. There were recorded large expenses and but little results. Other reports showed that the laborers had done their work with less expenditure of means but better results. There was instruction given by the one whose hands held the records and whose eyes were tracing every feature of the records. His words were, "You cannot trust in your own human ability or wisdom. You must have union of effort, union of faith, and you must counsel together. Not one of you is sufficient to be a leader. God will work for his people if they will give him a chance, give him their hearts and minds. You are not working for men, that you may receive your wages, in one sense, but shall we call this your wages? Oh no, the eternal reward is to be given the faithful workers. Jesus will give you your wages. All our faculties must be cultivated for eternity, doing better and still better work." 24, 1885, pages 1 to 4. Labors in Switzerland, number 1. Diary, September 25th to October 5th, 1885. MR number 378. At about 12 o'clock noon, October 20th, we reached Christiania and were welcomed by Brother Oyen at the depot. We were taken in a hack to the pleasant rooms occupied by Brother and Sister Oyen and family. We were once more among our English-speaking friends, and although we were welcomed and treated with every attention by our Danish and Swedish brethren and sisters, we felt all the time crippled because we could not converse together, and it was thus made impossible to do them all the good we much desired to do. But we are again in America, as it were. Christiania, Norway, November 1st, 1885. Sabbath was a pleasant day. I spoke to the people in the hall where the church met to worship, from 1 Peter 1, verse 13 to 17. I had freedom in presenting to the people the importance of practical godliness. All listened with great attention. The hall was full. In the afternoon, the ordinances were administered and the washing of feet. In the evening, a discourse was given by Elder Madison. Christiania, November 2nd, 1885, Sunday forenoon, spoke in a hall to a crowded assembly. It was estimated 1,400 were present. The text was 1 John 3, verse 1 to 3. The Lord gave me much freedom and clearness in presenting the infinite love of God in giving His Son to die for the world. Although the aisles were crowded and every seat filled, and even standing place occupied, large numbers were obliged to go away because they could obtain no entrance. The crowd held perfect attention to the close of the discourse. We hope this effort will not be in vain, but that through Christ's help, much good may be the result. November 3rd, 1885, Tuesday. We went on the cars 20 miles to fill an appointment at Drammen. The fog settled down so thick we could not obtain a sight of the country through which we were passing. We were 2 hours on the cars. We found a hall full of people at the appointed hour. The hall could only accommodate 700 people. The passageway was filled. All the standing room was crowded, and respectful attention was given as I addressed them from John 3, verse 16. November 4th, 1885. We left Drammen at 8 o'clock for Christiania. It was raining, but the fog had cleared away so that we could see the country through which the cars were passing. The scenery is very fine. The country is broken. There are high bluffs and rocky mountains, lakes and islands. In summer, this would be a very pleasant place to live in. Spoke Wednesday night in the hall, which was well filled. I spoke from Luke 10, verse 25 to 29. Christiania, November 5th, 1885. It is rainy, disagreeable weather. We have done much writing today. Visit at Brother Hansen's. We had a very pleasant, profitable visit. I conversed some through an interpreter, relating some incidents in our earlier experience. We conversed some upon the habits of the people in regard to eating so frequently. I related to them a little of my experience upon health reform and the manner of my eating since receiving the light from heaven. I also related to them the experience we had passed through in the first rise of this work. Christiania, November 6th, 1885, Friday. It is rainy, disagreeable weather. I spoke in a hired hall to a large audience from 2 Peter 1, verse 1 to 13. All listened with respectful attention. Christiania, November 7th, 1885. It is a foggy, rainy day. I long for the pleasant sunshine, but we will seek to make all the sunshine we can by cheerful, pleasant conversation, and in opening our hearts to let the sun of righteousness in, that we may, amid clouds and disagreeable surroundings, be ourselves sunbeams of happiness to others, because Christ abides in our hearts by living faith. Colossians 1, verse 24 to 29. The Lord gave me freedom and power in addressing the people. There is indeed a work to be done for them, and if the Lord will use me as an instrument to arouse them from the irreligious state they are in, I will praise His holy name. I presented before them the great need of those who teach in word and in doctrine to take heed to themselves, to be very circumspect in their course of action, and in word and example, seek to elevate the people to correct views and correct practices by their own habits and customs, and to be sure that in no way they belittle the requirements of God, especially the fourth commandment, which enjoins the observance of the Sabbath. There is in the Sabbath of the fourth commandment a test. It is God's test. It is no man-made test. This is to be the separating line to distinguish the loyal and the true, him that serveth God from him that serveth him not. Some, professing to be keeping all the commandments of God, were sending their children to school upon the Sabbath. They were not compelled to do this, but because the schools objected to taking in their children unless they should attend the 6 days in the week, they sent them to the school to study and also learn to work. If they could not, by wise and judicious means, make some special contract with the authorities of the school, reserving the privilege to keep the Sabbath of the fourth commandment, then there is but one way, to keep the Sabbath of the fourth commandment strictly. Special pains should be taken to establish schools among ourselves. Elder Madison has not given to our people a correct example. He has sent his children to school upon the Sabbath, and to justify his course has used the words of Christ, "It is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days." He may urge the same reason why men should work on the Sabbath, because they must earn bread to feed to their children, and there is no boundary line to tell what should and should not be done upon the Sabbath. And while holding the claims of the fourth commandment so loosely, these leaders were, by their example, encouraging the false tests which man has manufactured. The matter of dress was the subject to test character. Thus the commandments of God were made of little account by their traditions, while their own ideas and notions were binding heavy burdens and grievous to be borne. They were separating themselves such a great distance from the people that their influence could not reach them. They were giving altogether a wrong impression of the truth. There would be just such impressions given as would please Satan, that the Sabbath-keeping Adventists be regarded as a set of fanatics and extremists. The Lord's precious cause is not exalted, but the impression given to unbelievers is that it is the doctrine that makes them unkind, uncourteous, and really unchristian in their character. The Lord would have the subjects of His kingdom represent the character of their sovereign. His commandments are not left for man to trim down to suit his ideas or his convenience. God's great moral standard is His 10 precepts, the foundation of the faith of prophets and apostles. The Sabbath is the great test question, and He has made precious promises to those who keep His Sabbath from polluting it. His infinite wisdom and power and love are engaged in our behalf. The heavenly host are registering our names as among the loyal and the true. It is safe always to be on the Lord's side, and by faith to commit our whole interest, temporal and eternal, into the hands of Him who reigns over all in heaven and on earth. God is not pleased with His people in this place, for they have belittled His holy requirement, striving to bring His law into subjection to themselves, rather than bring themselves into subjection to His law. There has been a spirit prevailing of contention, of fault-finding, of making little items a test of Christian fellowship, while they have at the same time been lax and loose in keeping the Sabbath. After speaking with great plainness, I invited those to come forward who felt they were sinners, not in harmony with God, and who needed His converting power. About 50 came forward. We then knelt before the pulpit with the congregation, and by request I prayed while Elder Matson interpreted. There was some of the melting spirit of the Lord in our midst, but some remained hard and unimpressed. Their hearts are rebellious. Opportunity was given for testimonies to be born, and quite a number confessed they had about given up the truth and separated from God, and now wished to repent and come back with God's people. We tried to find a place to close the meeting, but it seemed impossible. Three were on their feet at once, and our meeting lasted about 3 hours. The work must go deeper yet. Christiania, November 8, 1885. The weather continues foggy and sunless. I write many pages today. At 5 o'clock, by appointment, I spoke in the large Soldiers Military Gymnasium. There were about 1,700 people assembled to hear the woman from America speak. The secretary of the Temperance Association introduced Mrs. White to the audience. As a canopy above the pulpit was the Stars and Stripes, which I highly appreciated, for I consider it an honor to be born in America, the land of the brave and the free. I spoke for 1 hour and 20 minutes, Brother Oyen acting as my interpreter. The people listened with deep interest. I showed them that the Bible was full of history upon temperance. I showed them the part Christ had taken in temperance. It was all due to Christ that man was given a second trial after Adam's fall. Christ redeemed Adam's disgraceful failure and fall by withstanding every temptation of the wily foe. I mingled Christ in this temperance lecture from beginning to end. The bishop of the state church was present. There were a number of the clergy present. The higher class of society were my hearers. After I had ceased speaking and stepped from the desk, Dr. Nissen took the stand and endorsed every word that had been spoken and that Brother Oyen had interpreted for me. He was very liberal in his thanks to the speaker for giving them the discourse. He then introduced me to some of their leading temperance men and women. Not a few came to greet me by shaking hands and saying, "I am so thankful to have heard you tonight. I never listened to a temperance discourse like this before." Indeed, when I was speaking, the congregation looked as solemn as if attending a funeral. No smiles were seen, and no stamping of feet was heard, for it was too solemn a subject to excite laughter or merriment. Dr. Nissen expressed the ardent desire that I should address them again. "But I feel that our people here need my help, and I must do all for them that is in my power." 27, 1885, 1-6. First visit to Norway, diary, October 31st to November 19th, 1885. Thursday night, May 26th, 1887, we left for Prussia to hold meetings in connection with Elder Conradi at Vowinkel. I was unable to eat and was not able to sit up much. W.C. White could not accompany us. Sister Ings and I went alone, except for a young man who was returning to his home from the office at Basel for a visit to his parents. We stepped on board the train at 9:30, May 26th, and had the compartment to ourselves. I slept well during the night, changed cars twice. We met Brother Conradi at Mainz. He accompanied us on the rest of the journey. We changed cars at Cologne. Here we had several hours to spend, but I was too weak to go out to see anything except the cathedral. We went inside of this building. It is a rich, costly edifice. There is but one greater in the world. It has been 600 years in building, and there is someone at work on it constantly. It was commenced in the 13th century and is not fully completed yet. Workmen were still at work upon the inside of the building. This is the place where cologne water is manufactured. Here the depot is prepared as if to be solely devoted to a dining hall. This is no convenience for travelers. A table is before every sofa, so arranged that travelers will feel compelled to patronize this restaurant. May 27th, Friday. We arrived at Vowinkel about 3:00. We were met by a brother, the elder of the church. We took a lunch and drove about 2 miles into the country. Here we found our brethren were living in a pleasant location. They have felt the oppression of landlords and have been wisely preparing, as far as possible, to have little homes of their own. There are in small houses no less than 3 families in a dwelling. A brother owns the home and rents to Sabbath keepers. Brother Conradi spoke Friday evening. I spoke Sabbath morning, May 28th, at 10 a.m. From the words in the prayer of Christ, that his disciples may be one as he was one with the Father. Then Brother Conradi told me they had never had a social meeting. They had met together for prayer, but not to bear testimony. We thought it a favorable time to break them in, and our meeting was good, lasting 3 hours from its commencement. I was urged to speak again in the evening at 8:00, which I did, upon the subject of making special efforts for harmony, and the necessity of the church having their minds occupied with thoughts upon the truth, the Savior, and the future life. By living and walking in the truth themselves, they will not be employed in talking of the errors and mistakes of others. After I had ceased speaking, Brother Conradi continued the meeting until midnight. Vision at Vowinkel, May 28, 1887, Sabbath. Last night, May 27th, I dreamed that a small company were assembled together to have a religious meeting. There was one who came in and seated himself in a dark corner where he would attract little observation. There was not a spirit of freedom. The spirit of the Lord was bound. Some remarks were made by the elder of the church, and he seemed to be trying to hurt someone. I saw sadness upon the countenance of the stranger. It became apparent that there was not the love of Jesus in the hearts of those who claimed to believe the truth, and there was, as the sure result, an absence of the Spirit of Christ and a great want, both in thoughts and feelings, of love for God and for one another. The assembling together had not been refreshing to anyone. As the meeting was about to close, the stranger arose, and with a voice that was full of sorrow and of tears, he told them that they had a great want in their own souls, and in their own experience, of the love of Jesus, which was present in large measure in every heart where Christ took up his abode. Every heart renewed by the Spirit of God would not only love God, but love his brother. And if that brother made mistakes, if he erred, he must be dealt with after the gospel plan. Every step must be followed according to the directions given in the Word of God. Ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Galatians 6, verse 1, he said. Rememberest thou not the prayer of Christ just before he left his disciples for his long, agonizing struggle in the Garden of Gethsemane, before his betrayal, his trial, and his crucifixion? See John 17, verse 15 to 23. Are you not forgetful of the sufferings of your Lord? Are you not forgetful of the estimate he has placed upon man, whom he has purchased with his own blood? You seem willing to wound and bruise the hearts of one another. Is this the pattern Jesus has given you? Where is his manner of dealing? Do you find yourselves sustained in having so little love and forbearance, so little patience for your brethren? Have you forgotten the words of Christ? A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another. John 13, verse 34, 35. John 14, verse 21, quoted. You are not cultivating love to God or love to your brethren. Be careful how you treat the purchase of the blood of Christ. There will be need of plain and faithful reproving of evil works. But let the one who takes this work upon him know that he is not separated from Christ by evil works himself. He must be spiritual and restore such an one in the spirit of meekness. Unless he has this spirit, he has no duty to reprove or to correct his brothers, for he would create two evils in the place of curing one. One condescended to clothe his divinity with humanity and came to our world in the likeness of men. He is the living fountain of life, the living manifestation of pure religion in our world. Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. There is but one way, one truth, and one life. And they that believe in him receive power to become sons of God. And these are no more in the world, but are chosen out of the world. The world knoweth them not, because it knew him not. The spirit and character of Christ are manifested in the chosen of God, by their heavenly conversation, their meekness, their blameless conduct. As many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. They are united to Christ as the branches are united to the one living vine. They walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. These are living examples of Christianity in the world. They are called Christians because they are like Christ, and because Christ is in them. Of a truth, they are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. The help of the Spirit and the words of eternal life are their wisdom and their strength. And they are led into all truth because they are willing and obedient. That which distinguishes the character and conduct of Christians from all others is the principle of holy, Christ-like love, which works in the heart with its purifying influence. The true Christian will work the works of Christ in giving expression in deeds of love one to another. With this living, abiding, working principle in life and in character, no one can resemble the world. If you know the character and works of Christ, you will know the disposition and conduct of Christians. Christ hated evil so much that sin and evil met a strong rebuke from his lips and from his example. While he hated sin, he loved the sinner. Our Lord and Savior loved every creature. He laid aside his dominion, riches, and glory and sought after us, sinful, erring, unhappy, that he might make us like himself. He humbled himself and took upon himself your nature, that he might be able to teach you to be pure, correct in character, and free from all impurity of sin, that you might follow him to heaven. He suffered more than any of you will be called to suffer. He gave all for you. What have you given to Jesus for this great love? Have you practiced the same toward your brethren? Have you copied his example in patience, in self-denial? You cannot equal the pattern, but you can resemble it. There has been committed to you the sacred knowledge of the truth, not for you to quarrel over and to become estranged from one another, but that you may be the light bearers to the world. According to your individual ability, will the Master reckon with you when he comes? What have you done to persuade men to accept the precious truth? All around you are those for whom Christ has died, that they might be made pure, holy, and sinless. Have your works as Christians been fruitful and productive of much good? Have you in meekness and in faith tried to sow in the hearts of others the seeds of truth, that they may bring forth fruits unto righteousness? How much greater strength you might have had as sons and daughters of God if you had loved God supremely and your neighbor as you love yourself. How much higher ground you might stand upon if you had been following on to know more and more of the truth and gathering more and more divine light to shine forth in good works to all around you. Your works are not pleasing to God, but pleasing to the enemy. You have lessons to learn in the school of Christ before you will be fitted for heaven. Yourself, your ways, your sharp traits of character make you unskillful in dealing with minds and hearts. You are oppressive where you should be kind. Your words and your works are the channels through which the pure principles of truth and holiness are conveyed to the world. Then if you are not cultivating personal piety, you cannot be the light of the world. If you allow yourselves to be dictatorial, accusing and judging your brethren, and with unsanctified hearts and unholy tempers seeking to mend their wrongs, you do unskillful work and drive souls away from the service of Christ. The believers will be a source of weakness to one another in place of a source of strength and courage, unless they are truly abiding in Jesus. There can be no healthful building up, binding together principles, unless the transforming grace of Christ shall be felt upon your hearts and characters. Everyone who has a knowledge of Jesus Christ, especially the elders of the church, must not carelessly allow the members to be irregular in conduct, and thus let evil and sin strengthen in the church, thinking this is the way to show love for one another. God requires faithfulness in watch care. You must take hold of God with one hand, while with the other hand, in love, you lay hold upon the erring and the sinner and draw them to Jesus. Pray with them, weep with them, feel for their souls, love them, and never let go of them. This is the love Jesus has expressed for you. You must ever strive for unity and forbearance and love. Never draw apart, but press together, binding heart to heart and making supplications in the Spirit. Then the power of God will work in your midst, and many souls will be brought to the truth through your influence. He was again seated, and the sun, which had been hidden, beamed forth and shone full upon his person. What a revelation! All knew in a moment who had been speaking to them. They said one to another, "It is Jesus! It is Jesus!" And then such confessions of sins as were made, and confessions to one another. There was weeping, for the hearts seemed to be broken. And then there was rejoicing, and the room was filled with the mellow light of heaven. The musical voice of Jesus said, "Peace be with you," and his peace was. Sunday, May 29th. Brother Conradi spoke in the morning upon missionary work. At 3 o'clock, I spoke to those assembled from 1 John 3, verse 1 to 3. I felt much freedom, although weak for want of food which I could not take upon my stomach. Brother Conradi labored with them faithfully, and I think with good success. There was a healing of their difficulties, except with one brother who left the meeting. Brother Conradi went after him and labored with him until 2 a.m., with a good prospect of the difficulties being healed. We here had an opportunity to see the work our brethren and sisters are engaged in for a livelihood. Brother Blank has a wife and 4 children. He weaves the most beautiful fabric, which sells for $8 per yard. He obtains for his work about 7 or 8 francs, and can weave only 3/4 of a meter a day. The sisters weave silk handkerchiefs. May 30th, Monday. We left Vohwinkel at 7 a.m. for Gladbach. We had an appointment to speak Monday night. We arrived at Gladbach about 10 a.m. We found friends waiting at the depot for us. We took a hack for Sister Dorners, who owns the building where they live. Her daughter is living with her. We were shown to a very pleasant room which we were to occupy during our stay. Breakfast was ready, but I could barely taste of the breakfast because I was constantly so sick to my stomach. The breakfast was comprised mostly of cake and bread and coffee. We had an invitation from the son of Sister Dorner to take dinner at his house. A hack took us to the place, a sister of Brother Dorner accompanying us. We had gone but a few rods when the hack lurched to one side and came up against the curbing of the sidewalk, and the horse, with the thills, was separated from the hack. We were soon out. The only trouble was that someone had failed to put in the linchpins that held the thills to the hack. Nothing was broken, and we went on without further trouble. The wife of Brother Dorner met us at the gate. She is a pleasant-looking little woman with 3 little children. She is the daughter of Brother Linderman, one who has kept the Sabbath 25 or 30 years. He is still living. He is 83 years old and is a second child. It is through his influence that the Dorner family received the Sabbath. There are 3 brothers, Dorners, believing the truth. They are in company ownership of a large manufacturing establishment in which cloth and cotton goods are made. It is a large building and a large business. The brother lives in this establishment where we were visiting. He has large grounds and trees and flowers. He is very pleasantly situated. This brother was the last to accept the Sabbath. One brother, the eldest of the 3, is lying at the point of death with cancer of the throat. It is a great affliction to his family, none of whom are keeping the Sabbath. The 30th of May was a holy day, the second day of Pentecost, so no work in the factories was done on this day. Colors were flying from buildings, and the people were pouring out in crowds to services. At 5, we met in Sister Dorner's house. The room was not large and was full. I spoke from John 15, verse 1 to 3. Brother Conradi interpreted for me. I had considerable freedom. I had special help from the Lord, else I could not have stood on my feet. I bore a very plain testimony. This was an intelligent company to speak to. Brother Conradi mentioned a request from the afflicted brother for the prayers of the children of God. We prayed for the sick and dying brother. Brother Conradi talked for some time to those assembled. May 31st. I rested well during the night, but the same inability to eat continues. We left about 11 o'clock for the cars to take us to Hamburg. At Dusseldorf, we changed cars. We were obliged to wait in the depot 2 hours and had a little opportunity to study human nature and witness the exhibition of vanity in those who came and went. It awakened most painful thoughts. Two young ladies entered the ladies' room, stood before the mirror, and then sought to beautify their appearance as much as possible, exhibiting themselves before the mirror, turning around this way and that, putting powder upon their faces. Oh, thought I, if they would be one half as particular to beautify their character by the great standard of God's holy law, his mirror, his detector of the defects in character, there would be far less vanity for the outward appearance, and far more for the inward adorning, the perfection of character, the possession of the meekness of Christ. At 2 o'clock we were again seated in the compartment for ladies, with every convenience, and were glad to be alone and to rest. I was sick and tired, unable to eat. We had no further change until we reached Altona, about 1/2 hour's ride from Hamburg. We had a grand sight. A ship on the water, or a warehouse close by the water, was on fire. It was thought that petroleum must have exploded. The flames reached so high, and the light was so great and far-reaching. The last change was made at Altona. We had no further disturbances till after this. A meeting which marked progress. Last European Council attended by Ellen G. White. Moss, Norway, 1887. Excerpts from the E.G. White Diary. About 12 a.m., Thursday, June 9th, 1887, we reached our destination, Moss, Norway, a very beautiful spot. The tents were pitched in a pine grove. A house was rented for persons from a distance who could not safely stay on the ground. There, the several rooms made many of us comfortable. We are located in a house built on a rise of ground overlooking the water. The scenery is fine. Everything is comfortable for us, and we expect to enjoy our stay here very much. This is the first camp meeting that has ever been held in Europe, and it has made quite a stir about here. We hope this meeting will make such an impression upon minds that we will be able to hold camp meetings after this, not only in Norway, but in Sweden and Denmark. This will bring the truth more directly before a class of minds we could not reach by any ordinary means.
Moss, Norway. Friday, June 10th, 1887. Arose at 4 a.m. After a season of prayer, commenced my writing. It is a pleasant day, some cloudy and not very warm. Rested quite well from 10 p.m. until 3 a.m. Could not sleep more. The sun has been shining brightly for half an hour. We met our friends from America and are glad to see them once more. Many are coming in to the meeting. Moss, Norway. Sabbath, June 11th, 1887. Passed a restless night. Great weakness seems to be upon me. By request, I spoke to the Sabbath school, interpreted by Brother Olson. It is pleasant to see so goodly a number represented in the Sabbath school. All the children look bright and interested. Brother Madison preached in the forenoon to a good audience. My appointment was at 2:30. I tried to speak right to the point, and then invited those who desired to give themselves fully to the Lord, those who were backslidden, and those who desired to seek the Lord for the first time. The large tent was full, and it was difficult to secure seats, to vacate the front seats to accommodate those who came forward. A large number presented themselves. Opportunity was given for them to express their feelings, and good testimonies were borne with weeping. A season of prayer followed. This was followed by meetings in the tents and children's meetings, which were good. Moss, Norway, Sunday, June 12th, 1887. It is another beautiful day. The attendance at camp from outsiders was good. The tent was crowded within and without. Elder Wagoner spoke upon the law and gospel. There was much interest manifested in the discourse. Elder Madison interpreted. In the afternoon at 2:30, I spoke to the crowded tent within and the mass of people without the tent, upon the ascension and second advent of Christ. I felt deeply while speaking. Although so large a number were standing who could not obtain seats, yet there was no noise or confusion, but respectful listening to the words spoken. I never saw a more intelligent-looking audience in America at any of our tent meetings.
The Lord gave me strength to speak in the power and demonstration of the Spirit. Elder Madison said he was never more greatly blessed than when he was interpreting me that afternoon. Many unbelievers in the congregation were affected to tears. Elder Madison spoke at 5 p.m., and the congregation was full, larger than in any part of the day. The priest in Moss had put an article in the paper making statements in regard to our faith as a people and ridiculing our doctrines. He misstated us. Elder Madison reviewed these articles with good result. There was a discourse in the evening by one of our American brethren. Thus closed the most important day of our meeting. Moss, Norway, Monday, June 13th, 1887. We are blessed with another beautiful day. It is warmer today than it has been. We learn all were much interested and pleased with the meeting Sunday. The testimony is that the blessing of the Lord rested upon the encampment from early morning until night. It is a marvel with the people who attend this meeting that there is so nice order observed on the ground, and the outsiders are astonished that our meetings are free from everything like noisy demonstrations and fierce excitement which characterize so many meetings called revival meetings. We can but pronounce this meeting a marked success. The news of it will be carried everywhere in these kingdoms, to Sweden, Norway, and Denmark, and will open the way for camp meetings in other places. Many came to these meetings with great fear and trembling. They thought it must be at great risk to live in tents, but when they saw the arrangements, stoves in the tents if it should be cold and rainy, they had naught to fear. They were so charmed with the beautiful, fragrant grove and the neat, comfortably furnished tents that they said if they had only known it was like this, they would have prepared to occupy a tent themselves. The terror and dread of camp meeting is all removed, and the way opened for camp meeting in these regions. The day was devoted mostly to business meetings. Elder Haskell preached in the afternoon. Advancements were made over any previous meetings that had been held in any of these kingdoms. Our brethren in Norway have not hitherto fully accepted the tithing system, and some have opposed this feature in our work as not required of them. But when it was shown to be the Bible plan, ordained of God from the first, that he had a church as far back as the days of Noah and Abraham, and that it was a duty enjoined upon believers in all ages of the world as God's means to carry forward his work upon the earth, and to impress man that God was the giver of all his blessings, and required them to return to him in tithes and offerings a portion of his bestowed gifts, they saw this in a new light. And there was a unity in voting for the resolution not to be negligent in this, God's requirement. No man, it was stated, obliged another to pay tithes. God did not make it a matter of compulsion any more than he compelled men to keep the Sabbath. It was God's Sabbath, his holy time, and to be sacredly regarded by man. But man must obey from a willing heart, both to observe his Sabbath and not to rob God in employing sacred time for his own use, or to employ the portion in tithes and offerings which the Lord has claimed to be rendered to him. Moss, Norway, Tuesday, June 14th, 1887. We have another beautiful day. The sun is shining at 3 o'clock full into my windows. Sister Ings goes today, in company with others, to Christiania, to return this evening. I am feeling more natural today than I have done for 4 weeks. I praise the Lord for these tokens of God. Our camp meeting people are now leaving for their homes, and business and the council commences today. Brother Sands Lane came yesterday morning. I went into the council, 5th European Council, held June 14th to 21st, this morning at 9 a.m., and listened to the testimonies borne in reference to the colportering and canvassing work. Elder Madison related a wonderful experience in his school the past winter in educating colporters to give Bible readings. Brethren Conradi, Henriksen, Olson, and Lane gave some items of experience in the work. I bore my testimony last, and the Lord blessed me in speaking to encourage faith and confidence in God. the Spirit and power of the Lord rested upon me as I tried to present to the people the goodness of the Lord to me and the grace and power of God bestowed upon me in giving me strength to bear my testimony in the places we had visited since leaving Basel. My heart was broken before the Lord in view of the strength, the presence of the Lord, that had been granted me. In the afternoon, I spoke again in regard to the work, its magnitude, and the reasons we had to believe the Lord would go before us and put His Spirit and power upon us in large measure, if we would walk humbly before Him and depend wholly upon Him and give His holy name the glory for all that was done. Moss, Norway, Wednesday, June 15, 1887. Again, we are favored of God with a bright, beautiful morning. The birds are caroling their songs of praise to their Creator, and our hearts are filled with praise and love to God for His great goodness and mercy to the children of men. Yesterday, Sister Ings was in Christiania all day. I was looking for her return at night, and the boat did not arrive till 10:30. I did not sleep until about midnight. I went into the council and was deeply interested. I had great freedom in speaking in regard to the possibility of doing a much larger work than we have hitherto done, and I tried to set before our brethren how much greater work could have been done if our brethren had taken greater pains, even at large expense, to educate the licentiates before they were sent into the field for labor. They were allowed to go and try their gift. They did not go with experienced workmen who could help them and educate them, but went out alone, and they did not all preserve close, studious habits. They did not grow, and were not taxing their powers to become able men in the Scriptures. They had obtained a knowledge of some subjects, could preach a few discourses, but if asked to speak on any subject in prophecy, would respond that they could not speak on that subject, they had not dwelt upon it. Now, such speakers cannot gain full proof of their ministry. They are deficient. Had they not been allowed to go into the field until they had some fitness for the work, then they would have been where they could grow and have some courage. But they were inexperienced as to the best methods of labor, and had very little success in bringing souls into the truth. The conference became discouraged in paying out funds while there was scarcely anything to show that had been accomplished, and this cutting down on the wages discouraged some who, with a proper amount of labor bestowed upon them, might have become good workers. They were discouraged and left the field to engage in other work. These meetings are of special interest and will be a blessing to all who attend them. Important matters are brought in and canvassed, and we believe much good is being accomplished. Moss, Norway, Thursday, June 16, 1887. This morning I rise at 4. Rested well during the night. The birds are singing. There is some appearance of rain, but the weather is mild, and I feel grateful to God that He still preserves my strength. I am desirous to live close to Jesus and make Him my counselor and my support and my all and in all. We had an important matter to consider in our council this day. It was that of preparing men by thorough training for the ministry before giving them license. They have been permitted to try their gift when they had not proper preparation, either in school education or in Bible knowledge, to warrant their going into the work, for they needed a great work done for them. First, every licentiate should be critically examined in his knowledge of the Scriptures before being sent into the field to teach others. This has not been done, and a very unsuccessful work has been done by many, and they could bring in no report of success. This discouraged themselves and also disheartened the conference, so that their time and labor was, they deemed, unworthy of much wages. And this discouraged them still more, and discouraged many from giving themselves to the work who, with the proper painstaking, thorough instruction and training, might have made thorough workmen and able ministers. I spoke also of carefulness in regard to dress of those coming from America and going back to America. Moss, Norway, Friday, June 17, 1887. I arise early at 3:00. The sun is shining brightly in at my windows today. We part with our brethren from the British mission and from those who are on their way to Africa to become missionaries to that distant field. Attended morning meeting. Spoke a short time upon the advisability of Brother Starr's coming to Europe. Visited the owner of the grounds, Mr. Erickson, and his family. Had but a short time to remain, but it was a pleasant interview. He kindly and generously proposed to let the governess of his children, who was an adopted daughter, take his horse and carriage and drive us over the island to see the important points of interest. We then returned and bade our brethren missionaries goodbye, thinking we might never meet again in this world those going to the distant field of Africa. May God go with them is our earnest prayer. Sabbath morning, June 18th, 1887. Elder Madison preached in the forenoon. I spoke in the afternoon from Galatians 6, verse 7, 8. We had a solemn meeting, called them forward for prayers, and had a solemn, earnest seeking of the Lord. Then many excellent testimonies were born with deep feeling. After the meeting, I had an interview with Brother Otteson. Brother Madison and Olson accompanied him. Before we had got through talking, Sister Olson said the lady that owned the house wished to speak with me. She had walked from the city, where she is keeping a hotel, and thought I was to speak at 5 o'clock. She was much disappointed. We had a very pleasant interview. I gave her Life of Christ in Danish. She asked me to pray for her that she might see the light and all the truth. Moss, Norway, Sunday, June 19th, 1887. I arise at 4 o'clock and have the evidence that I have been giving my lungs polluted air to breathe through the night. After taking our breakfast, Sister Ings and I walked out to the encampment, found a retired spot, and then spread out our fur and wrote an important letter of 10 pages to the missionaries going to Africa. Elder Haskell spoke in the forenoon. I spoke in the afternoon upon temperance to an interested congregation. Christiania, Norway. Monday, June 20th, 1887. We left Moss yesterday morning. Carriages took us to the cars, and we were 3 hours coming to this place. I lay down and slept some, but a great weariness is upon me. Carriages took us to Brother Olson's, and we had a good, convenient chance to rest. I was able to sit up but little, for I seemed to be nearly completely exhausted. I have no appetite. We parted from Willie, Elder Conradi, Elder Whitney, Elder Haskell, and Elder Wagoner about 9 o'clock. They took the train to Divide for different routes. Brother Haskell goes to England. The rest of the party to Stuttgart, Germany, and to visit other German places. Brother Olson, Brother Ings, his wife and I go to Stockholm, Sweden. Tuesday, June 29th, 1887. We took the steamer Princess Elizabeth at 10 p.m. to cross the channel to England. It was a large boat. We had a pleasant voyage. We were not seasick at all. About 6 o'clock we changed from boat to cars, and then we took our dry lunch. We arrived at London about 8 o'clock. Took hack 3 miles across the city and were obliged to wait 1 hour. About 9 o'clock we stepped on board the third-class car for Kettering, on the fast train which brought us to Kettering at 11:30. Brother Dorland was waiting for us, and he took us to his home, where we were welcomed by Sister Dorland. Kettering, England, June 30th, 1887. We slept but little the past night, suffered with heat. We have fair weather in England this time of the year. I arose at 4, have been awake since 3 o'clock, engaged in writing. Corrected several morning talks given in Basel. We learned here that the party who left Christiania, Elder Wagoner, W.C. White, Elder Whitney, Elder Haskell, were all very sick. They had a very rough passage on the Baltic Sea. We walked out and did some purchasing in the city in the great marketplace. Purchased shoes. Kettering, England, July 2nd, 1887, Sabbath morning. It is a very warm morning. I have not been able to sleep since 3:30. I engaged in writing. I feel deeply the need of special help from God in seeking to win souls to Jesus Christ. Without me, says Christ, ye can do nothing. How weak we are in our own finite strength. We want to work for the Master. I want to please Jesus, who has loved me, who has died for me. There is an unutterable longing of soul for the sweet, constant peace of Christ. I want Jesus in my thoughts continually. At 10 o'clock, the carriage came to take us to the place of meeting. It is a good-sized hall. Its walls are iron, and the hot sun resting upon it made it seem like an oven. We had about 50 assembled. I spoke to them from Hebrews 12, verse 1 to 4. Although the heat was very great, the Lord gave me much freedom in speaking. At 12, the carriage was at the door, and we returned to our home with deep and earnest yearning of heart for the dear people whom we had addressed. We knew that many must have a true conversion to God, or they would not be able to keep the truth or to withstand temptation. At 3 p.m., we again spoke to the church in Kettering from Matthew 22, verse 11 to 14. This was a most solemn subject, and the Lord impressed my heart with the terrible fate of the ones who, when Jesus shall come to examine his guests, he shall find without the wedding garment on. I think many were impressed. After the discourse, there was a social meeting and many testimonies born, but I felt that souls were in peril. Souls were undecided, and I urged that those who were not fully on the Lord's side should make decisions that day, should break the chains of the powers of Satan and be wholly the Lord's. I gave opportunity for these to come forward. Quite a little number came forward. Among them were two very interesting cases, a man and his wife, still quite young. He was a master workman and overseer of hands who were engaged in building. He was intemperate, often drunk for days together. He had a good, noble-looking countenance, but this was his great weakness. He had formed the habit of intemperance, and the demon of appetite controlled him, and his moral power seemed too feeble to overcome this appetite. His wife was a proud, worldly-loving woman. Both were convinced of the truth, but neither knew what experimental religion was. These souls I know needed Jesus, needed him just then to help them, else they would never have strength to overcome the world and the perverted appetite, and to walk the path of humble obedience. We had a praying season for these souls, and then invited them to speak freely, and this would give them strength. We know that the Lord had been chastising them to bring them near to him. Two lovely children had recently sickened and died, which was a terrible blow to them and softened their hearts and awakened in them a desire to be different from what they were. Both bore testimony and with much simplicity and deep feeling told their determination, and we must leave them in the hands of God for him to lead, for him to guide. He will do this if they will only submit themselves to him as to a faithful creator. Oh, what a terrible curse is intemperance! Kettering, England, July 3, 1887. Arose at 5:15 and find we have another warm day. Willie left for London at 9 a.m.
I spoke to the church and to outsiders Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. The hall was good-sized, but without proper ventilation, very uncomfortable and warm. Had some freedom in speaking. Quite a number of unbelievers were present. London, July 4, 1887. We left Kettering about 9 a.m., reached London in about 2 hours. We again met our brethren and sisters who were soon to leave for South Africa. We took the train for Holloway. It is a pretty village in the suburbs of London. We called at the house occupied by our sisters who were giving Bible readings and trying to get access to the higher classes. We found them well situated and doing what they can in fitting up for the work. We called on Sister Marsh, who has kept the Sabbath quite a number of years. Her husband is a warden in the prison. They live close by the prison. It looked sad indeed to see the large number of prisoners taking their half hour of exercise within the glowering prison walls, guarded at every step with officers. We had a little meeting with our friends going to South Africa, and some plain talk about how the work should be commenced and carried forward in their new field. We had a praying season, and the Spirit of the Lord came into our midst. We knew it was our parting meeting. London, July 5, 1887. We went into the city to do some trading.
then took a carriage and went to the boat to see our brethren and sisters off for Africa. We could not refrain our tears as we parted with them. London, July 7th, 1887. Continued in the hotel writing important matter. Did some trading. Had a long talk with Elder Haskell upon many important matters connected with the work. July 8th, 1887. Left London in company with brother and sister Ings for Southampton, on fast train. I lay down most of the way and slept some. We were about 2 hours and a half reaching Southampton. We met Sister Phipson and took dinner with her. She lives in a good-sized, hired apartment, and her mother lives with her. Elder Haskell came on a later train. He spoke Friday evening in the hall hired for meetings. Southampton, England, July 9th, 1887. I spoke to the little church on Sabbath afternoon. It was very warm. Had some freedom in speaking. We had a social meeting. Southampton, England, July 10th, 1887. Elder Haskell spoke in forenoon. Not many outsiders present. In the afternoon had a much larger number out. I spoke to the people at 5 p.m. Let not your heart be troubled, etc. The Lord helped me to speak, else I could not have done so. The people listened with attention. One lady came and spoke to me requesting an interview with me, for which a time was set. 36, 1887, 1, 2, 4 to 6. Third visit to England, diary, June 29th to July 10th, 1887. The body of dietetic counsels is found in Counsels on Diet and Foods. The portion for which release is sought gives the European setting. A. L. White. Meeting the situation of diet problems in the Central Headquarters Building, 1887. I have been laboring to set things in order in this building. 1 week ago, last Sabbath evening, April 2nd, we had a meeting with the families in the house to talk up certain things in regard to the food that should be prepared for boarders, and the influence that should be exerted in the families who board the workers. The Spirit of the Lord came upon me, and I bore a plain, decided testimony. I had presented much more upon general principles, but that did not set things right. The idea was so riveted in their minds that their own way was perfect, that the very ones who need to reform did not take hold of the matter at all. I was obliged to say decidedly, as did Nathan to David, "Thou art the man." It made a decided stir in the camp, I assure you. I told them that the preparation of their food was wrong, and that living principally on soups and coffee and bread was not health reform, that so much liquid taken into the stomach was not healthful, and that all who subsisted on such a diet placed a great tax upon the kidneys, and so much watery substance debilitated the stomach. I was thoroughly convinced that many in the establishment were suffering with indigestion because of eating this kind of food. The digestive organs were enfeebled and the blood impoverished. Their breakfast consisted of coffee and bread with the addition of prune sauce. This was not healthful. The stomach, after rest and sleep, was better able to take care of a substantial meal than when wearied with work. Then the noon meal was generally soup, sometimes meat. The stomach is small, but the appetite, unsatisfied, partakes largely of this liquid food, so it is burdened. The salads are prepared with oil and vinegar, fermentation takes place in the stomach, and the food does not digest, but decays or putrefies. As a consequence, the blood is not nourished, but becomes filled with impurities, and liver and kidney difficulty appear. Heart disturbances, inflammation, and many evils are the result of such kind of treatment. And not only are the bodies affected, but the morals, the religious life, are affected. I told them that unless they should change their diet, physical, mental, and moral degeneracy would surely be the result. Plain, good, substantial food must be given to our bodies, else there will be a poverty of the blood. I then dwelt upon the influence surrounding the soul, and the importance of elevated conversation at the table, and whenever they had intercourse with one another. Well, I talked many things, and I am now waiting for them to recover from the shock they have received before I give them another portion. I felt deeply moved upon this subject. Released 1958.